Call to order the Board of Aldermen meeting for June 5th, 2012. Let's see, do we have anyone who wants to speak on something not on the agenda tonight? Seeing no one, we'll move on to charges to be issued. We have two charges for advisory boards. John Nicopoulos, could you come up to the clerk, please?
And you are a recent appointee to the Transportation Advisory Board?
That's correct.
All right. As a Transportation Advisory Board member, I will, one, assist in the execution of studies, advise, and make recommendations to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen concerning all matters related to the transportation within the town of Carrboro and the surrounding area, including, but not limited to, the need for the construction, operation, relocation, or improvement of streets, sidewalks, and bikeways, as well as the establishment and improvement of alternative methods of mass transportation. Two, report to the Carrboro Board of Aldermen as requested by the board and undertake such studies or perform such duties as the board may request from time to time. And three, take any other action authorized by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. All right. Just get your signature here. Congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you.
And then you can meet the members of the board.
Good job.
Good to meet you.
Thank you. Look forward to working with you.
Could Eric Feld come forward?
And Eric is a recent appointee of the Appearance Commission.
That's correct.
As a member of the Appearance Commission, I will, one, initiate, promote, and assist in the implementation of programs of general community beautification within the town's planning jurisdiction. Two, seek to coordinate the activities of individuals, agencies, organizations, and groups, public and private, whose plans, activities, and programs bear upon the appearance of the town and its environs. Three, direct the attention of the mayor and board of aldermen to ways in which the town government may take direct action affecting the appearance of the town and its environs. Four, make recommendations upon any permit or other item referred to the commission by the board of aldermen, planning board, board of adjustment, or administrator. Without limiting the generality of the foregoing, the commission's recommendations regarding development permit applications may address the appearance or design of proposed development projects. Five, appoint subcommittees consisting of commission members or advisory groups consisting of commission members, persons who are not non-commission members, or any combination thereof, to advise and assist the commission in carrying out its duties. And six, take any other action authorized by the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. Congratulations on your appointment.
Thank you.
Thank you. And you can meet the members of the board.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thanks for working with you.
Okay, we have no resolutions or proclamations this evening, and the consent agenda is approval of minutes of May 15th and May 22nd.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved by Alderman Lavelle, seconded by Alderman Guest. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Matter passes 5-0. Before we move on to other matters, Alderman Slade requested that we reschedule item D5, and Randy would also like us to reschedule item D4 so the full board can discuss an additional question regarding the composition of the Greenways Commission. So if I could have a motion to reschedule D4 and D5 for June 19th. Been moved by Alderman Hafen O'Donnell, seconded by Alderman Johnson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Coleman and members of the board, Ann Gerhardt from the Women's Center and Doris Friend from the Family Violence Prevention Center would like to speak to the board regarding this item.
Right here.
Thank you very much. We were invited to make a presentation about the merger plans of the Women's Center and Family Violence Prevention Center in preparation for your approval of the Human Services Advisory Board's human nonprofit funding allocations. That is a big pile of cookies, Michelle. Sorry.
She's so hungry.
So we're going to have a Doris Friend, and then I'll do a from the Family Violence Prevention Center, and then I'll follow up. Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hi. I'm Doris Friend. I've been on the board of the Family Violence Prevention Center since 2006. For four of those years, I've been on the executive committee, past president of FFPC. And in 2010, I met with Ann and the president of the Women's Center, along with the FEPC director, to begin exploring the possibility of a more formalized partnership. It's clear that after the change in our economy, that our funders were starting to look to us for improved ways and leadership opportunities to serve our community. And we thought it was a much more desirable approach to be proactive in that regard rather than have somebody push us into a merger. FEPC and the Women's Center have been partners for more than 11 years. Until last fall, we were next door neighbors. So our clients moved freely from one facility to the other as their needs changed. So that conversation led to the formation in 2011 of an exploratory committee that was comprised of members of both agencies and paid professional consultants to help us walk through that process. That process took 6 to 8 months, and the opportunity for the merger and how we could better serve our clients was looked at from really 12 different perspectives, which included our respective missions, services, who our clients are, our finances, fundraising, our board and corporate structures, our culture, our staffing, and our volunteers. And out of that very extensive and methodical study, there was produced a 54-page report from
154-page.
Yeah, I thought
it was 54.
I think it was 54. It seemed like 154 to Ann, I'm sure. And in March of 2012, we approved the merger of our two agencies, and it's very, very exciting. Both agencies, it's been a pleasure to go through this process. It's been a positive process. It's an exciting opportunity for us, and in March, we both boards approved our new name, which will be the Compass Center for Families, for Women and Families. And at that same meeting, we elected Ann Gerhart as the new executive director for the Compass Center for Women and Families. So we are very excited about this opportunity. And I think more than anything else, we are excited and delighted about the opportunities that we can have to serve our clients better. Thank you.
Thanks. So, as Doris said, we have formally signed a merger agreement that was included in your packets. The merger goes into effect on July 1st, which is the beginning of our fiscal year. And as our merger has solidified, we've made some decisions. We'll be the director. staff are in the process of being cross-trained, which I think will add to our total capacity to serve clients. Our boards began meeting together in January, and we have voted on a new board for the joint agency to begin July 1st. And decisions about where services will be provided have not yet been addressed, but we're looking at where services will be provided in light of where, you know, we can best serve our clients. Again, we're really excited about the merger, and our overarching goal, as we made at each step in the merger discussions, was to really look at it with a light of how we could serve clients better. Our goal is to provide comprehensive services in the most seamless way possible, and accomplishing this through improved quality improvements and efficiency. One of the things that I learned as the merger process went ahead is that there will not really be any savings financially. We can be efficient, but efficiency takes more of the form of cross-trained staff, so that, you know, when there's four staff in each office and two people are sick, it's a little bit difficult in the office to provide services. But with a staff that looks more like 11 people, we can really be able to provide continuous service to our clients. In light of the recent shooting death of Shahnaz Kabir, we remain very firmly committed to ensuring that victims of abuse get the services they need and get connected to court services so that we can prevent re-victimization, and this will help the local police enforcement to not have to respond to domestic disputes to the same homes multiple times. And we hope to continue to work directly with the police in Carrboro, as Family Violence Prevention Center has done in the past, to improve services. So we're asking that Carrboro look at our merger in a positive light as leaders in our community, taking a risky and time-consuming step. The services of the Women's Center and Family Violence Prevention Center are not duplicative, yet they're very complementary. The Women's Center provides services that help women gain or regain self-sufficiency. We offer legal information, financial information, career exploration and support so that women can be able to support their families and their children. And Family Violence Prevention Center helps women and children in crisis and does programming in the schools to prevent domestic violence. So we're asking that Carrboro not cut our money in half, but that they that you make the decision to fund us at the current levels, both now and in years to come. So our funding level and request for Family Violence Prevention Center this year was $4,500. Our funding request for the Women's Center was $4,000. So our request to you is a approval and allocation of an $8,500 amount. At the time of the proposal deadline, when we contacted the local agencies, we had not yet signed a merger agreement. And so we were told by Chapel Hills, by Jackie Thompson, to submit the proposals separately. And when we went before the board, before the Human Services Advisory Board, I think was the first time that they recognized that we were merging. And so I think that they had some concerns, and I'm hope that you all understand more now about the merger than and have a comfort level with what we're doing. Do you have questions?
Yeah. Jackie? First, I'd like to thank you for the work that both of you do and for the level of professionalism with which you do it. I know that I get my backup when I hear people say that nonprofits ought to be run more like businesses, and I believe our economy would be in a lot better shape if some businesses were run with the eye to detail and the care if banks were run like nonprofits, we'd be in better shape. So thank you, and I think you are an excellent choice of director for that, so thank you. This evening, the recommendation before us is for family violence for $4,500 and for the Women's Center for $4,000. Mm-hmm. And that is what you're requesting.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I was the liaison to the Human Services Advisory Commission, and I mean, Ann, you spoke about this. For most of us, it was the first time that we heard that these two agencies were merging, and so there was a lot of concern and question about would the services be the same, would they be different, is there a need for funding for both, and I just want to reiterate the fact that you were told to apply as separate agencies, and we just weren't clear about that until that evening. So I'm very supportive of the work that you all do, and I'm excited about the merger and what's to come and more comprehensive services for clients.
Thanks.
I want to thank you for having the foresight to think about taking the bold step of merging, looking at the economic times and realizing the need is probably as great, if not greater, and, you know, joining forces. That's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do to create a new board and get that infrastructure going, and I want to thank you for the fortitude that it's taking to do that.
Thanks.
Thanks, Anne. Thanks, Doris.
Thanks, Anne.
I think we're all looking forward to, you know, Compass taking your work into a new phase of success and impact on the community. Thanks for coming out.
Thank you very much.
And it's nice to see a merger where staff remains intact.
Yes.
Women. Yeah, just women running things.
Item D2.
Okay, Annette Stone will make the staff report.
Good evening.
Hello.
Hi. Well, this is the culmination of about several months. It started back in November with staff from the county and Chapel Hill and Carver meeting and revamping an application and hoping to provide the Human Services Advisory Commissions for Chapel Hill and Carver with information in a way that was understandable, so that, you know, it started way back in that time frame with the applicants submitting. We had about 50 applicants, nonprofits submitting for funds. And
can I interrupt a second?
Sure.
This was a little confusing to me in the abstract, because we've never before, that I can recall, had reference to Chapel Hill's process when we've reviewed this. Did we have some collaboration with Chapel Hill this year on this?
Oh, they always, my understanding, the 2 years that I've done this, Chapel Hill and Carver sit together.
Oh, really? I never knew that.
Yeah.
They even did it back when I was.
Yeah, so for years I've sat there, uh-huh. Never once.
They hear the applicants talk about the projects, and then they go and make their separate decisions.
Okay.
So that's how it
it's
works.
It's a lot easier on the applicants.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So speaking of the Human Services Commission, two of our commission members are here this evening. I'd like to recognize Seth May and Daniel Gallman, who sat through several weeks of listening to applicants and nonprofits try to, in a little teeny time frame, 7 minutes, you know, talk about their year's work and why this funding is important. This year, you have in front of you a spreadsheet of all the agencies that have applied. The total funding amount requested was $244,000, $951. The amount of money that the town had available was $151,000 and $151,740, which is a 4% increase over last year's funding. So the town continues, and under the town manager's leadership, to grow that and provide those services. I will note that two things about the resolution in front of you. I think you have a corrected resolution in front of you. One, let me say that the whereas where it says it's 7% increase, it's a 4% increase. So if you'll make that note on your resolution, and also from what was in your agenda packet, section 1, it refers to pending your approval of the 2012-2013 budget. So assuming you all pass that budget, then that's the amount that's allocated and ready for allocated for these agencies. I think that's all that I wanted to mention about that. You have the spreadsheet in front of you of what was received the prior year, what was requested by the agency, and then what was recommended. There were a few where maybe there wasn't as much funding. It was a difference in the funding recommendation, and so you got a little note there kind of what was the human services thinking on that, and we will communicate that back to the agency when we respond to them. So with that, I will open up for questions.
Questions, comments. Lydia.
It looked like in many instances a little X on this column meant they got a little more than they got last year.
Well, no, what the X meant at the time was there was a lot of discussion about that particular organization. That was to go back if we needed places where we needed to cut or add, or it was, you know, to remind us that that was one place to go back to.
Okay.
So
okay.
That just got left in the spreadsheet and printed in there. So.
Anyone else? Michelle?
I just wanted to also thank all the, I mean, two of you here, so thank you for your service on the advisory board. It's a lot of work and a lot of time, and I really appreciate the folks who volunteer to support nonprofits in this way. And also, almost all of the nonprofits spoke about how necessary and important and appreciative they are of the out-of-agency funding, and we had a tough job. And we're able to fund most of them, at least at the level that we did last year, or a little bit more. And some that we didn't fund, was the reason was because they weren't serving folks in Carver, or there are little notes here about it. So it's a really good process. Thanks for leading it, Annette. And I had two questions. One is, I can't remember if this fund's going to increase next year. Is there another increase in the for 2012-2013 fiscal year?
The funding that you have before you is for
12-13,
and it's a 4% increase over 11-12.
Right. Okay, I was thinking this year, calendar year.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
And the anti-discrimination policy, can you tell us, remind us, because we had emails back and forth about that, including LGBTQ folks, and has every agency
that was in,
been informed?
Yes. That's going to be in the contract. Yes, they've been informed, and in the contract that they sign for funding, it will have the exact language that we have in all of our policies.
Okay.
So when they sign and say that they're accepting this money, that is part of the contract.
Okay, awesome.
Anyone else? Can I have the motion for the modified resolution stipulating 4% increase rather than 7?
Second.
Okay, moved by Alderman Gates, seconded by Alderman Jack.
Randy moved it.
I guess you sound the same from here.
Moved by
Alderman Hager O'Donnell, seconded by Alderman Johnson. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Passes unanimously. Before we move on, I just want to particularly thank the town manager for recognizing the importance of the state agencies and finding a way to increase the budget for this year, because I know it's sorely needed, and it's very gratifying for us to be able to do that. So thank you. And thank you, Annette.
Can I just real quickly say and thank Holly Holland, my assistant in my office. She does a tremendous amount of this work of taking these applications in and filing them and sorting them and scheduling and ordering food and doing all the things she does. She does a huge amount of this work, so I thank her for that.
Thanks, Holly.
Great.
So don't go anywhere. You're still up.
Oh, that's right.
Thank you.
Item D3.
Yes. Okay, well, this is something that we have worked on for quite a while, and I think that we've all come to a happy ending, I'm hoping, this evening. This is something that this board has talked about before. It's the proposed new criteria for the revolving loan fund, the business revolving loan fund. I try to distinguish it from the energy efficiency revolving loan fund now. You all saw this back in February or March and had some questions and concerns, and we have modified the language, and you can see in the recommendations that you have in front of you where the language has been modified. And in addition, the whole question of a microloan or sort of a separate loan to do some different things, again, since our new town manager's here, that is going to become a contention on your approval of the budget, a reality. And so we just completely took that language away from the CDBG-related funding so that we can create the rules however the ESC and this board feel like it'll best benefit the community. And that'll begin after the time of the adoption of the budget. So you have the revised criteria in front of you with the modifications that you asked for before. It's been in front of the ESC, and they recommend approval.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay. It's been moved by Alderman Lavelle, seconded by Alderman Haven O'Donnell for the resolution. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? Matter passes unanimously. Thank you, Annette.
Thank you. Thanks,
Annette. Thank you.
So item D6 is a resolution making an appointment to the Orange County Animal Services Advisory Board. And who are applicants? Matthew Prentice and Michelle Walker. Do we have a motion for either of them?
I move that we appoint Michelle Walker to the Orange County Animal Services Advisory Board.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Alderman Johnson, seconded by Alderman Gist, to appoint Michelle Walker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Matter passes unanimously. Item D7, Mr. Manager.
Okay. Members of the board, I believe Jeff Brubaker is going to make the staff report on that. But we seem to be short the planning department.
We're an hour and 15
minutes.
We're an hour and
15
minutes.
It's
Jackie's birthday.
Well,
it's all started off.
Well, why don't we move on to item D8?
I think
so. Randy's not here either.
Yeah. If you'll pardon me, I will.
If you're watching on TV,
would anybody, like a cookie during the break?
Lots of cookies.
Well, this is what happens when Shelton goes out of town. Everything.
There's this party. Yeah.
Well, we've knocked a couple things off.
Things wouldn't have taken
that long. Randy's on his way, and Jeff is coming from Chapel Hill.
I think Randy may be in front of Jeff at this point.
Okay. Well, whoever gets here first, we'll go.
Is there anything?
And you're not able to fill in for either of them, I take it, on either of these matters. Okay.
Well,
they're almost really prepared since they're not here.
So we can sing happy birthday.
No, we can't.
No singing. Jackie doesn't want singing.
Okay. Or we could put Portlandia up on the screen and people could watch that.
That's true.
I wonder if there's a Portlandia board meeting.
I don't know if it's G-rated.
It's not.
Yeah, we can.
No, we can't.
Yay! Yay!
Okay, item D8, Mr. Manager.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening. Purpose of this item is to give you an update on our efforts for stormwater management through a state permit.
Great picture, Randy. I don't know if people notice the oil slick and the very good.
Yes.
Yeah, good work.
Yes. So NPDES, the acronym here is the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System. We've been operating under this permit for a while now. It's been renewed. This is an EPA and federally mandated program. We had a permit that was issued in 2005. It was reissued formally in November. There was a slight amendment that came through in December, and so we just want to keep you informed on these new requirements. The permit has six primary pieces listed here. Not going to dwell too long on most of them, but we do want to at least touch on them. Public education and outreach, we're meeting that requirement through a variety of measures. We work with a regional partnership called the Clean Water Education Partnership with a number of other jurisdictions is one way of doing this. And then we also do a lot of work locally. One thing I want to let you know that we're planning for this coming fall is to work with, through the Century Center and the Rec and Parks program to have some both evening classes and one or two Saturday workshop kind of activities. And these will be focusing on things that will be helpful to inform our citizens about ways that we can all be working to be better stewards of our local creeks. Public involvement and participation, the primary vehicle that we've set up in Carrboro for satisfying this is to have our Environmental Advisory Board be our sort of a town government arms out into the community. Bringing this to you is another way that we want to get the word out. We also, the plan that we have developed, we've put out on our website so that people can be reviewing that. But, you know, basically, I view this part of the permit requirements as sort of the way we do business in Carrboro. This is, you know, we're very, we have ongoing involvement with our citizens. The two start items here I want to talk a little bit more about, so I'll be going through those, and I won't mention them now. The construction site stormwater runoff control, we've delegated this authority to Orange County. And this is basically for erosion control during development. And finally, the pollution prevention and good housekeeping piece. This is one that our Public Works Department takes the lead on, and it involves the things we do with, you know, a lot with our roads and streets, and but also our municipal facilities, and just minimizing any opportunities for runoff impacts that happen in our own municipal operations. What are illicit discharges? I'll talk about illicit discharges a little bit here. All of these sources can potentially be an illicit discharge if they get conveyed through our stormwater system to creeks. So these are all pretty obvious as things we want to keep out of our creeks. But it's helpful to just, to be clear about them. But the very last point, you know, is in the federal requirements. And we do actually want to make sure we keep sand, dirt, and ashes out of our creeks. So what is not an illicit discharge are some of, or all of, these are examples, but these are the primary things we're concerned about. So just to be clear, you know, when irrigation water or uncontaminated groundwater or potable water, foundation drains from buildings, et cetera, you know, all these things are not considered to be illicit discharges. This one is one that I find to be interesting in the federal requirements, and one the residential and charity car wash, and I still think we want to work with any folks that are doing that kind of activity to minimize the possibility that car washing activities can end up in creek impacts. But
are the regulations controlling the use of phosphates at car washes in the detergents?
For commercial car washes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are regulations that require that all commercial car washes discharge the sanitary sewer. Whether or not they require phosphates to be controlled or limited, I'd have to look into that. I'm not positive.
Just curious.
Yeah.
Randy, I have a question regarding the residential and charity car washing. What about brake dust? Why wouldn't that, I mean, the particulate matter in that could...
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so this is the federal requirements, and the rationale here is just to not regulate, residences and charities explicitly. If we wanted to go above and beyond in what we do, then, you know, that would be something we could choose to do. But, yeah, I mean, brake dust is obviously has metals in
right.
it, and... I think the question here is whether this is something we want to do through strong regulations or through more through an educational approach.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously, you know, if we start regulating residential and charity car washing, there's a fair amount of compliance and enforcement mm-hmm. kind of time involved in doing that as well. So that's something we would have to weigh carefully.
I certainly would like us to be able to look into that in terms of adding it to the educational piece, because I think folks don't realize, you know, what's in the brake dust and it would be transferred to the water.
Okay. So we have been doing some work in our previous permit cycle. We did update our town code to include an illicit discharge piece in 2008-2009. We did a lot of work in the past several years to update our stormwater system mapping. We've thoroughly inventoried our stormwater system. The length that we've mapped is about 55 miles. I just think that's helpful for us all to know how, you know, about the extent of the conveyance system that we maintain and operate. That's just what we've mapped. It doesn't include all the conveyances on private property, for example, and it also doesn't necessarily, you know, we haven't captured completely all of the ditches along driveways and even probably some of the ditches along roads in doing that. So that's a conservative estimate. One thing we did last time is we initiated what is known as an outfall reconnaissance inventory, and I'll talk a little bit more about what this involves in just a moment, focusing on the downtown area. And we also worked with the North Carolina Cooperative Extension Service to do a training for a wide number of town staff, and included in that we also invited some of the neighboring jurisdictions that participated in that training. And we also have been doing some planning for illicit discharges. What this basically entails is that when we go out and look at a stormwater outfall during dry weather, when there shouldn't be any water running through it, since there's no rain happening, if we happen to notice that there's a discharge, if there is water coming out, then we want to have some way of determining if that discharge is from an uncontaminated source or potentially from a source that we would like to control and eliminate from the system. And so so we're done some planning on how to monitor for that kind of situation. And we've identified priority outfalls that we want to be looking at. I have a map I'll show up show here in just a moment. And I noticed a typo here, I should say. And then, so if we go to one of these sites and we find that there's water running and it looks like there could be some contamination, then obviously we need to follow up and trace it to its source and figure out how to get rid of it. These are the priority outfalls that we've identified here. So we're looking at downtown right in this area, town halls right over in this area, Owassa plants here, some of the large multifamily housing, and of course the bypass running here. So all the blue dots represent stormwater outfalls that we, some of these we've already visited. And all of these we intend to visit in the near future and see if there's, during dry weather, if there's anything being discharged from them that we need to be concerned about.
Randy, is that large cluster that's along where the multifamilies, from there west, is all that draining to Morgan?
Yes. So basically the divide between Morgan and Boland runs somewhere here through downtown. Mm-hmm. More or less like that. So quite a large majority of these sites are draining to Morgan Creek. Relatively few. There's one that's not quite showing up on your map here, but I can see it on my screen, actually. That's all the way up at, we have a site at McDougal. Yeah, that got it there, all the way up there. That one's basically the runoff coming off the McDougal site there. So we'll be looking at all of these in the, you know, hopefully as many, maybe all of them, but as many as possible this summer and fall, and following up if we find any concerns. And basically, the monitoring that we're focusing on is looking at detergents or surfactants and ammonia as our two primary indicators. And if we find concentrations of surfactants or ammonia, that's pointing us to the possibility that there's either wastewater or some kind of wash water contamination. If after doing that monitoring, we still have some uncertainty about being able to trace the source, this is when we would consider trying to get a WASA in to help do some additional monitoring. And I suppose there's even a scenario where we might find something, and even at that point, we aren't quite sure what it is, and we might need to do some contract lab work to further identify the source. In our town, sewage is probably the main thing we're concerned about. And so that's it for the illicit discharge piece. And now I'd like to move on to the post-construction runoff requirements. This is the part of the permit that basically focuses on our planning for and then managing new development. So there's a big emphasis on appropriate design of management practices for new development, and there's also an emphasis on the BMP operation and maintenance. So one thing I did want to mention to you as part of this is that we are looking at instituting in our fee schedule new fees for town inspection of BMP, what we call best management practices or stormwater BMPs. And so I think it's on the 19th that is scheduled for you. Is that we're in the next few weeks, you should be expecting to see that. I mentioned, so the design and permitting as part of the post-construction runoff control requirements, this is all our primary mechanism here is to rely on the North Carolina Division of Water Quality BMP manual as the source of what is seen to be what we see what we require in new development to satisfy our ordinance requirements. I do want to give a heads up that about our maintenance and inspections to let you know what we've been doing. Well, first let you know what we've been doing and then what we're planning to do. We have inventoried all of the best management practices that have been permitted in the town. The number's up around 170 over a whole number of developments over several decades. We know the location. We know the type of device. And so that's whether it's a retention or detention, a bioretention, a filter, a cistern, and several other types of devices. We know the area that device is treating. And then we have instituted in the past couple of years a maintenance and inspection program that means that new developments and new management practices that are permitted have various requirements for maintenance and inspection. A responsible party is identified. There's a requirement for entering into an agreement with the town that clearly identifies the necessary maintenance for the device and clearly identifies responsibilities both for the, in instituting this program, we're both making it clear the private party is the responsible party for the maintenance, and then the staff has responsibilities for ongoing inspection of these devices. What we're seeking to do in this permit is to make sure that we've inspected every single practice in the town during the course of the permit, and there's a number of practices that we seek to inspect annually. This is a map of where they all are. This map hasn't been updated in the past several months or maybe even close to a year, so there's a few others that have come online since it was created, but it gives you some sense for the broad geographic distribution of all of the practices that have been permitted. So in some future activities that we're planning, we have to submit an annual report for our first year of the permit by November 2012, and we'll be making that available for review this fall. And as I mentioned, we'll be pursuing illicit discharge, reconnaissance, and monitoring, and doing outreach in, on the best management practice maintenance and inspection program. So we have created a plan, stormwater management plan, and posted on our website. We will be submitting this to the state sometime in the upcoming month or two, or maybe three. You know, we welcome any feedback on this from any parties. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Thanks, Randy.
I have a question. The stormwater management plan in and of itself, how does it relate to or how does it inform our reports for the Jordan Lake rules? Is there... What's the relationship?
Yeah, it's really its own thing, and we have a separate separate reporting requirement for Jordan Lake rules. We've been working with the state staff to try to streamline that all into one thing so we're not having multiple reporting requirements, and we're hoping that with the annual report that we submit in November that we can basically... You know, either this year or if not this year, then as soon as possible in future years, sort of merge those reports into, right. into one. And the state has given us some indication that they're open to that. But you know, I think we sort of have to demonstrate that we can satisfy both reporting mm-hmm. requirements in one place.
Excellent. Thanks.
Anyone else? Thanks again, Randy. Is there a motion for Attachment A?
Attachment A. I move Attachment A.
Okay. Moved by Alderman Haven O'Donnell, seconded by Alderman Johnson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Passes unanimously. Item D7.
Thanks, Randy.
Thank you.
I know that's a lot of work. Thank you. Jeff's here. It must be 9:30.
He was watching the county. Oh, he wanted a transit. I'm just guessing.
I want to see what's happening in Wisconsin.
Maybe he'll do Wisconsin.
Okay, so this is a follow-up agenda item from the March 27th public hearing that the board held on a concept for safety improvements in the Jones Ferry Road corridor. This is a concept, if you recall, that was developed by NCDOT after repeated inquiries from the town and from citizens and from the board specifically as to the safety in this corridor. And we do have a safety problem in this corridor, as we all know.
Yeah.
20 reported crashes in the last 5 years, two Class A injuries in the last 5 years. So this is a real opportunity to improve what is one of the least safe corridors in the town. And town staff have been working with NCDOT, and NCDOT has developed a concept plan that they have indicated they will use for an application for spot safety funding, but they want to get the town, and specifically the board's input, before they go ahead with that. This is the current cross-section looking eastbound towards downtown. You can see that there is six lanes in this particular cross-section, and if you look the other way, you can see also six lanes. So there's turning lanes and, of course, a right turn lane for a channelized right turn lane for traffic entering NC 54 eastbound. This is looking west. And here's more, the view from the sidewalk. We went over some current conditions at the March 27th public hearing. What I want to do is just summarize the concept plan just to refresh everyone's memory. In general, the concept plan consists of a road diet. We're familiar with the road diet from the West Main Street presentation. This is also a road diet in the fact that it reduces the number of vehicle lanes throughout the corridor, which stretches from east of Davie Road to about Willow Creek Shopping Center and Ashbrook Apartments driveway. New bike lanes are proposed to be added, as well as new marked crosswalks, high visibility crosswalks, both parallel to Jones Ferry Road and across Jones Ferry at Davie Road. And there is a potential for new sidewalks on the north side of Jones Ferry Road, although NCDOT has indicated that they likely would leave the responsibility for building the sidewalks to the town, which doesn't mean that the concept plan couldn't go forward without those sidewalks. It's just that the particular funding pot that they're applying for has a $250,000 limit. And if you add a long sidewalk in there, you're probably going to inch over that limit. So the concept plan has many other things in it, though, that I think you can argue improve pedestrian safety. Specifically, the concept plan consists of raised medians along the Abbey Court and Ridgewood Apartments frontage. Raised medians, painted medians along the remaining road segments, and left turn bays to replace the current center turn lane at Davie Road, Alabama Avenue, and NC 54 bypass. And then new bike lane segments on west of Davie Road. Currently, the bike lanes do not extend west of Davie Road, except for on the north side just a little bit, but then they end, and cyclists are kind of left to fend for themselves. I know I usually take that corridor either as a pedestrian or a bicyclist, occasionally a driver, a few times a week. So what we've preliminarily talked about with NCDOT is the potential for protected bike lanes. Oftentimes, you don't have room in a cross-section to do this, but there's a real opportunity for protected bike lanes. As you can see here in the photo, this is from San Francisco. Basically, the bike lane is wider than a standard 4-foot bike lane, and then there is a buffer between the bike lane and the road. The buffer could be a painted buffer. It could be supplemented, as it is here, with plastic flexible delineators, and in some cases, it's a curb buffer. And these have begun to be implemented in cities around the country, and those cities in general are seeing a huge increase in cyclists in those corridors because there is a categorical difference in the feeling that you get when you're cycling between a protected buffer and when you're cycling between with only a 4-foot stripe separating you.
They're using that in New York City, too.
Yes, exactly. That they're one of the cities that's really going forward with it. Not to say that bike lanes are great, but this is kind of the next level up.
Keeps the cabs away from the bikes.
Exactly. that's one of the benefits. Mm-hmm. One other thing I'll mention, there's a painted bus pull-off at Abbey Court Apartments bus stop. I talked about those other two bullet points. And in general, the concept plan does address one of the recommendations in the adopted bike plan, which is the addition of bike lanes in this section of Jones Ferry Road. This will also could gel nicely with the town's bond-funded Davie Road sidewalk project, which will be completed on the east side of Davie Road by the end of 2013. From here, I will go to the specific questions that were asked by the board and by citizens subsequent to the March 27th public hearing. One of the, I think, the main questions that was asked was, can the medians accommodate plantings? And as you can see, as you may have seen in the memo, the medians can be built to accommodate plantings, according to what NCDOT has told us. The project itself will not plant anything. They will not fund the plantings, but if you look at NCDOT's guidelines for plantings within the highway right-of-way, they do allow third parties or municipalities to plant within medians as long as the plantings are in accordance with the guidelines and as long as there is a permit received by the municipality or by the third party. So the point in the draft recommendation for the board's consideration at this point, there doesn't need to be every last detail of a planting plan figured out, but I think the main point to be considered is to convey to NCDOT this project should incorporate a median that can receive future plantings. And here is an example. You may have
is that in the resolution already?
Yeah, it's one of the comments. Okay. Here is an example. You may have seen this when I was pulling it up, of MLK Boulevard in Chapel mm-hmm. Hill. Mm-hmm. There's some nice, I believe these are daylilies. Planted in the medians.
Is this something that we can, and I guess Randy's not here, but refer to the EAB, because I know they've done extensive work on the native plantings for Town of Carrboro?
Yeah, I think that's something you could definitely do. Okay. I know there is one citizen interested, too, in learning more about the plantings and contributing as well.
I would hope that DOT would not let you plant fruit trees there. Is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Because that would be, you would have roadkill. There'd be a lot of roadkill if you could plant fruit there.
Yeah. As I said during when the board was considering the Smith Level Road Concept Plan in 2010, I wouldn't eat any of the plantings on the list because I'm not an expert on it. I'd let somebody else uh-huh. decide if they're edible or not.
Right.
So,
fruit trees are not there, right?
There's a list of plantings
okay.
there. I think that I would imagine that fruit trees would be very discouraged for the reasons you mentioned, attracting deer perhaps, mm-hmm. And also for the traffic safety.
Mm-hmm.
But they do allow some plantings, and they encourage native plantings, too. So I think there's definite room for different things to be considered.
Great.
Another question that was asked was, can the bus stop, the Abbey Court bus stop, be relocated? The Abbey Court bus stop is right here. Here's Davie Road. Here's Jones Ferry. And this is, of course, if you recall, the highest ridership bus stop in all of Carrboro.
Mm-hmm.
660 people a day use it. The staff recommendation is that the bus stop not be relocated. And the reason is, this is, of course, you can see at the crest of the hill. As it is relatively close to the intersection. And what you want to do is discourage people from crossing mid-block. Mm-hmm. Like right in this area, there's very poor sight distance for cars coming eastbound to see someone crossing right here. As it is, of course, some Ridgewood Apartments folks do cross mm-hmm. right here, and that's dangerous, but we feel that the sight distance would be made even worse if it were moved eastbound. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, there is a steep, as you can see right here, there is a steep drop-off right here behind the sidewalk. So if the bus stop were relocated from its current location right here to right here, there would likely have to be some intensive grading and perhaps a retaining wall built there. And I know speaking with George and his public works staff that they also see some challenges to relocating the bus stop eastbound. Relocating the bus stop westbound, you also get into the retaining wall that's built in along Abbey Court's frontage. So I think there'd be some real constraints there, too. So their staff recommendation is to maintain the bus stop's current location. And we think it'll be a good, if there's a marked crosswalk put in here, it is pretty close to that marked crosswalk. We also looked at the whether the project would be likely to create turnaround traffic in Alabama Avenue. And, you know, the question is, we can't predict what every driver will do. There are, of course, those drivers who don't drive very reasonably. We wish there wasn't, but there are. But we think that from the after the implementation of this concept plan, one thing that it will do is it will prevent left turns from this gas station driveway onto eastbound Jones Ferry Road. And that the reason for that is that the proximity to the intersection really makes things dangerous. It's right over the crest of the hill as well. But folks from the gas station, if they want to go eastbound on Jones Ferry Road, can turn out Davie and then turn left at Davie Road intersection. It would be much longer to turn right onto Jones Ferry and then make a U-turn around the new median, and even longer to turn right onto Jones Ferry, turn right into Alabama Avenue, make a U-turn on Alabama Avenue, and then turn left back onto Jones Ferry. So we think that at least, you know, we don't know for sure what all drivers will do, but the by far the shortest distance route, the most intuitive route, seems to be to turn left onto Jones Ferry Road. There was also a question, should the project, if the project creates a center median, should Neville Road continue to be open? And if you recall, most road diets can be implemented effectively on roads with less than 20,000 vehicles per day and not cause any congestion issues. In other words, not cause any temptation to cut through to other roads. Because Jones Ferry is currently at 9,000 vehicles per day, we feel that there is room, there is sufficient capacity to implement the road diet without creating any major congestion on Jones Ferry Road. We talked about the median plantings. We also had a comment before implementing the road diet, try reducing the speed limit from 35 to 30 miles an hour. And the staff recommendation is that this should certainly be looked at, but after the implementation of the project. What tends to decrease speeds the most is the feel of the road, the design of the road. If there's a wide open space with three lanes going each direction, that tends to encourage speeding, and a road diets have been shown to reduce speeding. So we recommend that be looked at after the implementation of this project. The current 85th percentile speed is about 45 miles an hour, so you can tell that the design of the road encourages drivers to go pretty far over that 35-mile-an-hour posted speed limit. There was another question about moving the loading and unloading location for the bus stop for Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools. Currently, the bus drops off and picks up kids right about at the Chapel Hill Transit bus stop. But I think this is really a question that would be best addressed by Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools transportation staff. But if there's any other follow-up action that the board would like town staff to do on this point, we're certainly open to doing that as well. There was also a question about a second driveway access for Abbey Court. As you can see from this oblique photo, there is only one driveway access serving all of Abbey Court. And the specific question was, can there be a driveway to the east of it? It doesn't seem very feasible because there are tennis courts and buildings blocking any potential driveway to the east. And also, in speaking with Abbey Court management, they said they also didn't feel that there was room to implement a driveway to the east. But if the board wants to follow up on this general concept, the recommendation is that the board direct staff to, as a separate follow-up, to explore additional accesses more on this property. The traffic light issue, I think we kind of mentioned it at the March 27th public hearing. Currently, a traffic signal is not warranted. If there is an increase in traffic on Davie Road, that may eventually lead to a traffic signal being warranted, but there's currently not enough cross traffic. And it's NCDOT's belief and position that that right now a traffic signal is not warranted. There was also a comment that this could have a negative impact on Alabama Avenue. I think that it's reasonable to believe that that since the concept plan only changes two axes, and the memo kind of talks about, it's not very likely that these axes have a tangible connection to increasing traffic on Alabama Avenue or Neville Drive, because it's they don't create an incentive, any more incentive than there is today to drive on them. But certainly, if that's something that the board would like to see further, the recommendation would be that staff follow up with various departments follow up and monitor the effect after the implementation of the project. There is also a question of whether the median will prevent the opportunity for left-turning traffic out of Alabama to merge with eastbound through traffic on Jones Ferry Road. And the basic response there is that the current center turn lane should not be used for merging. It's not legal, and it's not recommended in the driver handbook that a center turn lane be used for merging. If you look in your packet, attachment D, you'll see that the TAB reviewed and made some very constructive comments. Those comments are addressed more in the memo, and if you have any specific questions about them, I'd be glad to talk more about them. But those comments, for the most part, are reflected in the draft resolution in attachment A1. Should the board wish to forward those comments that the TAB made along to NCDOT as part of any resolution the board would make.
I had a question about one of the TAB recommendations that I've always wondered about, and I was really glad they brought it forth, and that was the reducing the turn lane from 54 on the westbound on the ramp. Maybe you could explain why DOT might have a problem with that.
Sure. Would that be, are you speaking of the westbound on-ramp reducing the or increasing the curb radius or reducing the speeds?
Well, no.
This is off-ramp.
The off-ramp.
The DOT, off-ramp.
On the TAB recommendations, they say the town should ask DOT if the NC-54 westbound off-ramp could be reduced from 3 to 2 lanes. I always wondered about that, and I was really glad that they had raise that question.
Sure, yeah. As you can see in this image right here, you can see that it's a little bit dim, but you can see that there are 3 lanes there, and the TAB's suggestion was reduce that to 2. Mm-hmm. I think that's certainly something that could be asked of NCDOT. It's not, I think, something that's within this project, but I think that's certainly something that the board could make its intention known to NCDOT. When you have turning lanes, right now there are 2 lanes to receive left turning traffic.
Uh-huh.
If you reduced 1, that may be able to work. I can't say right now for sure.
But if you're dieting the westbound on Jones Ferry, it would make sense to also reduce down to 1 left.
Yeah. You can see here there's 2 lefts, basically.
Right.
And that certainly a comment that could be provided if the board wishes.
I certainly would appreciate that.
Yeah. Finally, I think I'll go over another citizen question was, did NCDOT consider various sizes of tractor trailers when developing this plan? I've not gotten written confirmation that they did, but that was certainly something that they expressed to us verbally as they were developing the plan, was that they were considering tractor trailers. You can see here this sheet right here. The question focused on Alabama Avenue, and you can see here, maybe it's the other one. sorry. Okay, yeah.
It's Davy.
Yeah, this is Davy. This is two. This is three. Okay, it's a little bit cut off here, I'm sorry, but there's the left turn storage for Alabama Avenue is 100 feet, and that would tend to accommodate a tractor trailer. But that's something that could be confirmed, you know, 100% with NCDRT as the project moves forward. With that, I think that summarizes kind of the major points that were raised by the board and by citizens. And at this point, you have the resolution before you and the TAB recommendation, and I'd be happy to take any more questions.
Sure. It seems the convenience store, if I understand it correctly, you know, if folks choose to go out directly on Jones Ferry, that's when they might do the turnaround. But otherwise, if they go out on Davy, then they can go straight out and then just go left on Jones Ferry. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And it also seems like that could be alleviated somewhat just by some signage at that exit directly onto Jones Ferry to say those turning left should use other exit. That would be another way to tell internal cars that weren't aware to just go to the other exit to go out that way. Right.
Yeah, I think we could follow up with NCDOT and any, you know, and since this is at a concept plan stage, they haven't gotten into the particular signage, but we could certainly make that clear to DOT that we want to make sure that any signage that will discourage, irregular movements by vehicles is posted in the proper location.
Well, yeah, I think to the extent we can educate people at that store to use the other exit to go out to go left, I think we should include that.
I'll make a note of that.
Thanks.
Other comments? Jeff, can you explain how the resolution in attachment A3 relates to the resolution in attachment A1? Because that's not entirely clear to me.
Sure. The resolution in language in attachment A1, and it goes to A2 as well. So that resolution has language that allows the board to endorse the plan subject to any comments that would need to be made and recommend that NCDOT move forward with spot safety funding. And then there are optional comments here. And then resolution in A3 allows the board to not to refrain from endorsing the plan, but take some other action as it might see fit. So the staff recommendation is for attachment A1.
Okay. So I have one additional comment so far, which is Randy's suggestion that the exit ramp configurations be matched to the reconfigured Jones Ferry Road. Does anyone have any other suggestions for
that? Lydia's signage
within the convenience store to make sure it directs people.
Ah, okay. Right. And so and Lydia's suggesting about the sign.
And do we need to add to that the TAB recommendations, or is that?
Well, that's what I refer to, Mr. Okay. Rising.
All right.
Most of the TAB recommendations are, for the most part, included. I think the only one that was missing from A1 was the point that you made, Randy.
The exit ramp.
Yeah.
And the plantings, where you said before when Dan had asked you if it was in there, I didn't see it under A1. Could you direct me to that?
Optional comment A is construct the medians to allow for future plantings.
Okay, so when we say future plantings, can we just say consistent with EAB's native plantings list?
I think so, but I think no matter what the EAB recommends, that recommendation will have to stay within the parameters of the NCDOT right of way guidelines. Within those guidelines, that's certainly something that's I think possible to make.
Anything else? Okay, so
move the resolution with the two additions.
Three additions.
Second. I'm sorry.
The one about the exits, the one about the signage, the one about the...
That's F and G, right?
Okay, so it's resolution attachment A is moved by Alderman LaBelle, seconded by Alderman Johnson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, anything else from staff this evening?
To give just a couple of minutes, George would like to give an update on the postal tree.
Jeff, can I just ask one quick question in terms of spot funding? Can spot funding, are there other, quote, spot funds that could be sought after at a later point for some of the smaller projects?
Maybe the spot safety category really is targeted to address those really dangerous corridors in terms of crash history. So if there's a corridor that's dangerous but it hasn't showed up in the crash history for whatever, that might be less likely to receive spot safety funds. But there are other funding sources that can be pursued, like small division has small construction funding or things like that. So certainly there's an opportunity for other projects that the board sees important for funding to be pursued for those too.
But once the spot safety funding is used for that corridor, subsequent funding for spot safety couldn't be applied to that?
It may be.
Maybe, okay.
I'm not positive of that.
Okay.
We can always ask the regional safety engineer.
Good. All right. Thanks.
Thanks. George.
Good evening, everyone. You may recall it was May 1st that I reported to you that we had found some significant decay in the post oak across from the Century Center, the one to the south, and that we were contacting Bartlett Tree Service to come out and do some what was called arborsonic, putting sound waves and through it to find just how hollow it was. Well, I'm sorry to report that it is very hollow, and I have a picture here, a result from a graph from the, and the light blue is hollow. So this is just above the root flare portion, right at the bottom of the tree. To give you a feeling of the scale here, the tree is roughly 4 feet across, and the remaining parts on the outside that are green and somewhat healthy are only 8 to 10 inches. So when you calculate this area in here, I just did a rough down, it's about 50% gone. So based on that and the recommendation from Bartlett, it's critical and it needs to come down. So we're in the process of getting some quotes to do that work, and once I have that information, we'll probably put out, certainly send you something and then probably put out a press release and so forth to let folks know. It's going to be delicate taking it down because it's so much is gone, so you just can't lop off one side. Mm-hmm. You've got to keep it balanced. So the reason I'm telling you this, it's going to add to the cost of the removal of this tree with the wires on one side and so forth. Certainly it's accessible, which helps. But just want to let you know, and I'll be sending something out as soon as I get the final report and so forth.
How tall is that tree?
Taller than me, and I don't recall that I know.
60 feet, maybe?
I don't think it's 60 feet, okay. But 40, 50, maybe. Now you have me curious. So I'll go up there right now and see if I can find it. I don't know. I really don't know the history of those trees and planting. They were there obviously before the parking lot was put in, but something I believe was there before the parking lot, a building, if I'm not certain. And
when they remove it, they'll remove the root base as well, or just crop
mm-hmm.
it?
Okay. No, we'll probably grind the stump. Now, there's not much left down there. It's pretty, that's a problem. It's right down past the root flare into the ground. It's all rotted, and as you can see from this graph that there are some areas here that it's already through. And this is how it was discovered by our grounds crew looking at it and so forth, moving some of the mulch out of the way so there are some ports all the way through.
Okay.
And George, will it affect sidewalk when they remove, or?
No, I don't believe so. The sidewalk is, how do you mean? Certainly in terms of traffic, we'll probably be closing down the lane and pedestrian travel, but.
Disturbance to the.
No, I don't think we have any unevenness there due to these trees, not that I'm aware of, or in the parking lot.
I really appreciate how much you care about the trees and how much you and your staff work to preserve the trees. I think a lot of places, maybe people are a lot more cavalier than y'all are towards the trees. So thanks for like really taking good care of them, and for, because I totally trust your advice on
trees. Well, I appreciate
thanks.
That, and I feel personally bad about this one because starting back in, oh, I guess it was 2006, 2007, we worked hard, spent money to deep fertilize the tree, and it was showing stress back then and seemed to recover. Just in my short time here of 8 years, I saw progress, but this spring it was pretty evident that something was amiss in terms of the way it leafed out as compared to the one to the north. We did this this same test to the elm tree out here, and it appears to be fine. So.
Hey, that's good.
So as soon as I have more information, I'll let you know, because we'll need to close off the parking lot, close off a travel lane, assuming that most of it can come down in a day.
We'll have to find something very magnificent to plant in this place.
We'll have to think of something.
Something creative.
Thanks, George.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
George. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, just one quick question. On the Greenways and OWASA appointments, would you like to consider those on the 12th or the 19th?
Well, the resolution is for the 19th being our next business meeting. But
okay.
If the agenda indicates that that's very busy and we should do it the 12th, we could.
It's up to you.
Okay. Well, let's
19th?
Stick to our protocol and do the 19th.
Thank you.
Okay. Any matters from the board?
Move,
adjourn.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks,
Dan.
Anyone else want to adjourn? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Thank you. Please see these people. You can take a